Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live, and we're so elated to have Cindy Williams back with us in a few moments. So I appreciate all your calls, some of you even sending in questions in advance, and so we'll be back with Cindy in about 20 seconds. Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live, and welcome Cindy Williams. How are you?
I'm pretty good, Richard. How about yourself?
Well, I'm doing great. And you know, we are so excited that MeTV has Laverne and Shirley back on Wednesday nights now. And you've been doing some spots and picking some of your favorite episodes for that, huh?
Yes. They had Penny and myself and Eddie Mecca pick our favorite 13 episodes. So that was a lot of fun. Even though Penny and I crossed over with four of them, but she got her list in first, so I had to go back and pick my second favorite of those, you know, four shows.
Mm. Yeah, I've heard the analogy of Lucy and Ethel used a lot with you, too. Such a comedic duo. And you started writing together. Do you think that was part of the chemistry that you had, that you started off as writers together?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, no matter what in the world, we would have had, pardon me, chemistry together. I mean, it was just a natural thing. But writing together certainly sparked the idea, you know, that Gary had of putting us together to play these two characters who he, you know, first described to us as girls who date the fleet.
Well, you know, that's interesting because I was thinking about that, too. When you see that Happy Days episode, you're both party girls. And then on Laverne and Shirley, it seems you are more moral, more upbeat. So they kind of morphed a bit. I mean, you just really fleshed out in different ways after that, huh?
Right. It changed pretty drastically as far as from where we started to where we ended up. And I think it was they just toned down. They had to tone down the characters because we were in Family Hour. And so it just found its, you know, it just found its balance. And you know, the end result, I think, was it was still the characters, but it was a lot softer. You know, both of us were a lot softer.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, I've heard this, you know, spiritual principle, when you let go, things happen, let go and let God and everything. And you know, reading your story, it seems like right before this big break, you had reached a point where you were ready to almost walk away from or leave Los Angeles for a while. I mean, is that apocryphal or is that true that you almost left right before the big chance?
No, that's true. Mm-hmm. I just had a miserable 2 years and I, you know, broken up with my boyfriend. I didn't put that in the book because I didn't want to name names, but I broke up with my boyfriend and I hadn't worked and I just wanted to get out of town and go wait tables somewhere else for a year and then maybe come back into town. But I had just sort of, I was sort of burned out.
Mm. Wow. That's encouraging, I think, to a lot of the actors that listen about, you know, that you've been through that. And well, speaking of waiting tables, we have some questions that have been sent in. And Richard Pangelo in Washington asked about your waiting tables at the Whiskey and waiting on Jim Morrison. And I know we both had kids, I think, that have played music and played at the Whiskey. That was the story that a lot of people like to hear, was your encounter with Jim Morrison.
You know, Richard, I wrote it in the book. The whole chapter, Love, Peace, and Happiness, is basically dedicated to that. And I wanted to write it in real time, you know, kind of, I mean, with the rhythm of, so I took the reader with me when, you know, when I was in that panic when Jim Morrison orders a bottle of Jack to the table, and then I go to the bartender, and the bartender, Tony, says, is Morrison in the club? You know, he knows damn well he can't have a bottle of Jack at the table. Go tell him. And then back to Jim Morrison, back and forth with all my other customers, trying to flag me down because they wanted to order. And it was my first night, and, you know, just with the music in the back, it was all set to music, let's just put it that way. And, you know, and they'd given me the VIP section, and I was so enamored, of course, as everyone was, with Jim Morrison. But I can't tell the story. I don't know how to edit it down to make it, you know, really as exciting as it was. You know, I'd have to read it almost, but it was a night I treasure. And and I did, you know, he was my very first customer, and they'd given me the VIP section on my very first night. He was my very first customer, and back and forth between the bartender and him demanding the bottle of Jack, and the bartender saying, I won't send it to him. He can have a double or a single, but no bottle at the table. And then back and forth until I was reduced to tears. And Jim Morrison took my hand and said, ask me my name. And I said, it's Cindy. And he said, well, Miss Cindy, we're just playing with you. Bring me a double. And I looked around, and they had all set me up, along with Jim to punk me. And it was just a setup to see my reaction to, you know, to everyone was watching me, in other words, going back and forth and scrambling to get to try and get Jim Morrison this bottle of Jack to the table. But it's much, I just can't give it its full weight and fun, just, you know, describing. I do a better job having written it. I mean, I think it's, you know, I think it's really fun to read.
Well, it's interesting how full circle you started out writing with Cindy before the show and now writing this great book. So those of you listening, by the way, the title of Cindy's book is Surely I Jest. Great play on words. And Surely I Jest is Amazon, Barnes & Noble, online, of course, and any bookstores. And I agree with Ron Howard, who says that this lady can write. You know, speaking of the Howards, there's a groundedness. I directed a film Ron's father was in, Rance, and I was real impressed with how grounded that family was. And I get that same feeling from you as a mom and with your two kids, and in fact, standing up for that, you know, with the show when you were pregnant to have that time. How have you stayed, you know, grounded with all the Hollywood and the up and downs of stuff?
Well, sometimes I think I should join the pack and, you know, and start demanding things and, you know, and saying, do you know who I am? But I could never, ever, it's just not my character. I don't have an iota of that in me, you know, to be like that. And it's just, if you always keep your sense of humor and your humility, no matter what you're going through, as far as show business is concerned, no matter how famous, how up you are or how down you are, you'll always, you know, you'll always come out on top with yourself. I mean, you'll always feel good about yourself. And I just can't, you know, I mean, the politics of Hollywood is just, it's like a, you have to have rhinoceros skin to take it every day, as a friend of mine put it, you know, to go out there every day as an actor and, you know, go up for a part and go in and read and then not get the part or get the part. But, you know, you've got to, you can't take things personally, and it's very, very tough to do that. It's just, it's human nature to want to say they didn't invite me to the party. You know, I didn't get the part, and sometimes your friend gets the part. You know, and you didn't. And so my friend Lynn and I had this, she made up this word, ha-pity. And you're happy for them, but you get to pity yourself a little bit. And that's about the most you can do it. But you can't, start thinking that you're above the crowd ever, that you're better than anybody else, that your gift is from yourself and not from God. You know, you've got to, always bless the other person, and always, you've got to just keep your feet on the ground and shoot for the moon. And, dream big, but keep your feet on the ground. And I'm like incapable of not doing anything but that. And I'm just incapable. I'm going to negotiate this. They're going to be sorry. I can't do it. I just can't do it. That's why I wrote a book about none of the politics of my career. Absolutely. I mean, the most I get is like at the end with Paramount, scheduling me to work on my due date. Mm-hmm. And even that, I just left so many things out, but I wasn't going to get into the real politics. But that was what happened. That's the bottom line. And I was out of there because I never, I wanted to write. That's why it took me so long to get this book published, because I'd pitch it as anecdotes of and fun stories of thing, these treasures of adventures that I was afforded because I had this, I was blessed with this fame and with the show and all the doors and avenues that, I could open and go down. And, travel up and down all these marvelous streets of show business. And nobody wanted it. They wanted dirt and salacious stuff. And I just was not willing. I'd never wanted to do that. And so that goes hand in hand with always keeping your feet on the ground and staying grounded. You would never expect Ron Howard to write a book, a tell-all. Or anyone in that family, in the Howard family, because they're just not those, kind of people. They're just nice people who love everybody. And so I like to think of myself like that, too.
Yeah, yeah. And when we first met you, you were his girlfriend, Lori, right, in American Graffiti. That was kind of the beginning of this whole 1950s journey for you, huh?
Right, that's correct. And had I worked with him before? No, I'd never worked with Ron before that. But we've worked on many, many things together. I played his girlfriend, his wife, his date, his mother. I think I put that in the book about this show that we did where it was this religious show in the 70s, and it was, and he was, I was a teenager, and, I was struggling with the fact that I was pregnant and going to have a baby, and he was my baby in heaven, struggling with the fact of if he wanted to be born or not. It was called Insights, was the name of that show. Martin Sheen and Monsignor produced the show. It was a wonderful show.
Oh, that's beautiful.
But anyway, Ron and I, yes, Ron and I played, I've lost the string there. My dogs were barking, not my feet.
I hear them
back
there.
My real dogs. Yeah. But anyway, I hope I answered that question. I'm not even sure what the question was.
Well, you sure did, about being grounded. And those of you listening were with Shirley, with Cindy Williams, a.k.a. Shirley from Laverne and Shirley, and her book is Shirley, I Jest. And I really appreciate that it's the classy way that you did approach this, because I was saying earlier, I just was scratching my head reading that, on your due date and the kind of stress and long hours on TV that you were scheduled to work and those kind of things. But you don't dredge up this stuff in a kind of bitter way. It's just like, okay, here's what happened, but you know what, we got this great show that turned out great, and in the creative process there's differences and everything, but we accomplished the goal of this great funny show that everyone loves. I mean, that's the feeling I take away from it, instead of a tell-all feel to it. And I really, really appreciate the way that you wrote this. I think you really handled it well.
Richard, thank you so much. That's one of the biggest compliments I've gotten about the book from you just then. Thank you. And that's exactly, that was exactly spot on my intention, was that the when the reader puts my book down, they're not going to think, wow, I didn't know that. That gives me a grimy feeling. Now when they, you know, when I watch Laverne and Shirley, I'm going to feel, you know, I mean, it would put a pallor over it. And it was, the show was about fun. That was all we intended was to make the audience laugh along with us. And that was our great joy and blessing. Now, how we got there is just, you know, nobody needs to know, you know, when there were fights or whatever. Nobody needs to know that, because the intent of the show was fun for everybody. And you suck that fun away when you start saying things about people that, you know, could be true or might not necessarily be true. And I just had no, I took no stock in that. I had no, I just didn't have, there would be no pleasure in that for me. And you know, I just wanted to write a loving piece that when the reader put it down, they had a smile on their face and felt good about themselves and Laverne and Shirley. And so that was exactly my intention. In fact, the first title of the book before I came up with Shirley I Jest was If You Can't Say Something Nice About Somebody, Don't Say Anything At All. That's why in the last little, there's that story about Suzanne Summers and Vanity Fair Party, and I don't name who that actress and the actor are in that, because they were kind of mean to me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't, but it was such a fun story, I wanted to put it in there. So I could have, you know, used their names, but I never do that. I don't want to hurt their feelings, you know. I don't want them to have to read something or have somebody go, wow, did you see what Cindy Williams wrote about you in her book? I just didn't want that. And that's the only place that I really do talk about people. But it was such a fun, I don't know if you've read the book or not, Richard, but that is, it's such a fun story. And but they were naughty. They were naughty to me. And but it was a fun story, so I did want to put it in. And I think that the reader has fun with that story, you know. And that's exact. Instead of thinking, wow, what a, you know, what a tramp. Wow, what a mean actor he is, you know, instead of that. Because they don't deserve that, you know. I was only in that situation for very few minutes with them. But anyway, and it was a fun story. It really was fun.
Yeah, it really was. And I think that Shirley was, in many ways, she was a lot like you in that sense. I mean, she was a nice person who wouldn't do that. And there was a lot of you that was really in that character then, wasn't there?
Well, you know what, Richard? I always think of sitcoms as personality plays. And so you come in playing a character in the pilot, and then the writers start watching you, and they pick up your idiosyncrasies and your gestures, your ways, and they start writing toward that. If it's something that they like, you know, and that is fun and appealing. And so they're writing toward the best of your personality. That's what I think that when they wrote, you know, for Penny and myself, I know that's how they did it. You know, I mean, and there's a bit of genius in that for all of them. I mean, they would apply their Shirley to my Shirley, which was my personality. And then it would be a mixture of the writers, you know, personalities with that character, which was a fun character. So they would write the fun in themselves for the fun of Shirley through, and the fun of me, if you can follow that, you know, because it is about personality. I mean, when you're on a sitcom, you're not doing a major character study, in other words.
It makes a lot of sense, and it seemed like you and Penny knew those characters right away. One of the things I love about them, I was telling my wife watching it on MeTV last week, that I just feel like the love of this friendship and that these two girls are two friends we all have because they're blue collar, they're trying to make it, and I love how you tell, and I hope you don't get tired of telling the same stories, but I love how you've talked about how you came in there and they had this set, like, you know, these are Better Homes and Gardens apartment, and you came in, and you and Penny, which was being some very gutsy girls, the way you came in there and changed it and brought in all your personal stuff to make this more like some struggling girls, right?
Exactly. Well, when we first, you know, we were so excited the right before the first rehearsal was to begin the next day. We went down to Paramount together, and we wanted to see the set. And we met at Paramount, and so we snuck onto the soundstage, and we went backstage first, around to the side. We wanted to surprise ourselves with looking at the set, so we went and we looked at all the dressing room. We were just thrilled. We couldn't believe that it was for us. So then we went up the back stairwell where that the door opens in the front door opens in the Milwaukee apartment, and we threw it open, and our hearts sunk because they had wall-to-wall carpeting, beautiful wall-to-wall carpeting, beautiful wallpaper, incredibly elegant furniture, a sofa, you know, end tables, beautiful lamps, and a coffee table, and chairs, and a backboard with all these beautiful wall hangings and china, porcelain tchotchkes all around. And we just looked at each other and said, oh, no, no. It looked like, I don't even know what set. It looked like, as you said, Richard, Better Homes and Gardens, Architectural Digest. And we just took off flying, and she went to her house, I went to mine. We gathered all the crap we could gather from our houses. I got my grandmother's old doilies, and I got a stack of newspapers my mother had that was about 3 feet high. I got old movie magazines, my old car coat. She got 45 records. We got pictures of our friends, our high school albums, and a bunch of stuff. And we met back on the set, hid all the furniture we could hide, all the tchotchkes. We hid all the porcelain stuff, took the wall hangings down. She hammered her 45s into the wall. I put up a picture of my friend Don on the wall you can't see it on the set, but he's flipping the bird. But it's way, you know, but it's up there, but you can't see what he's doing. And we put just junk all over the place and took away as much as we could from the set and hid it. And the next day all hell broke loose. And the producers came down, the set designer, you know, the set dresser, and then finally Gary, and then, you know, and Tom Miller and Eddie Melkus, the other producers, and we had to start arguing, and we argued that these are girls who strive in their lives for wall-to-wall carpeting, that's what they want to attain, the mm-hmm. kind of home that can have wall-to-wall carpeting where they don't have matching sweater sets. They would love to have matching sweater sets. They would love to have that beautiful furniture and beautiful wallpaper and a beautiful home and gardens home, but they don't, and that's the fun of the show, is that they're constantly striving to make themselves better and to you know, get married and marry a doctor or a lawyer and make a career for themselves. But they're bottle cappers, and that's the fun of the show, is this struggle, is the wolf constantly being at their heels. They can't make the rent some months. They're like everybody else when they're that age, you know, everybody else in America and in the world, trying to come up with the electric bill, trying to come up with, you know, the money for the gas bill, trying to throw a little party and have enough money to buy actual Coca-Cola or Pepsi-Cola, and instead we don't have the money, so we buy blue drink. you know, and that's the fun of Laverne and Shirley, the fun of the common guy that just has to struggle. And we just went on, and finally they relented, and the carpet came up, and we had linoleum floors that we threw, you know, scatter rugs on, and we got, you know, like Goodwill furniture like they would have had, and they brought down the, you know, they made the wallpaper look old. What we had to return all our all the furniture and everything that we had hidden. They were really mad about that, you know, all the wall hangings and the porcelain tchotchkes and everything. But we made our point. We said that's the fun of the show. It had to look more like the Honeymooners' apartment rather than Mary Tyler Moore's apartment. Mm. So we argued that. And the other thing we did was we rotated our wardrobe. So we'd wear the same thing. You know, we'd always repeat the wardrobe because we argued these girls do not have pretty clothing. They want that. They want, you know, and again, that's the fun of the show, watching them struggle to try and attain that.
Mm. Yeah, just reading it also, there's this feeling that you're enjoying, as you're becoming a big star, you're also in awe of it or enjoying it almost like a fan. The you mentioned the Vanity Fair thing with the cookie of the actor and wanting that cookie, and or even when you just describe coming on that set and you're like, oh my God, this is all for us. Can you believe this? Pinch ourselves. And that, you know, I really love how you enjoy how awesome some of these moments are. Meeting Cary Grant was another kind of starstruck moment for you, wasn't it? And wasn't your mother with you when that happened?
Oh yeah, Frances was with me. Yes, that was the whole point. She, as Cary Grant approached our table at Hollywood Park, she screamed, "Oh my God, it's Cary Grant!" And I kicked her under the table to shut her up. And then by the time he got to the table, my mother was saying, "You kicked me!" And I said, no, I didn't. And Cary Grant was standing right there. But meeting Cary Grant was like meeting a Greek god. I mean, it was like, talking about it right now, I get shiver blisters because he was so awesome. So awesome. Mm. And just magnificently handsome and just beautiful in every respect, and the nicest guy, just the nicest, but suave. He had everything you would think Cary Grant might be, add 100 to it or 1,000 to it, and add nice self humor. He was very tickled by my mother screaming that out and me kicking her. Not hard for the listening audience. I didn't hurt her. I just warned her to pipe down. And but he got he got a kick out of that. No pun intended. And but just a great sense of humor. And you know what? He was a fabulous comedian, physical comedian in his own right. In fact, I, from Arsenic and Old Lace, I had stolen some moves that he did. Any time I had a double take, it was a Cary Grant double take. I mean, because as a kid, I loved Arsenic and Old Lace, and I watched him in that. And he is just a brilliant, brilliant comedian and physical comedian, along with everything else that he is. So Cary Grant, not disappointing, better than, bigger than life, better than you could ever imagine, and a nice guy to everybody. Talk about somebody with their feet on the ground. That's why everybody loved him, men and women. He had his feet, you know, he loved being the common guy too. But he wasn't. But he was still with us, you know, still with the, anyway, just brilliant, brilliant human being.
Well, you certainly did a wonderful job with that physical stuff, too. I think Suzanne Summers, in praising your book, talks about you having Lucille Ball comedic timing and Dick Van Dyke physical humor.
Yeah. I told Suzanne the only thing she left out of that quote was the body of Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, she had that in the original quote, but she, being the blonde sex symbol, she felt that might be competition for her, so she...
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
She...
Oh, Suzanne, you crazy critter, you. Yeah. I said, I really was uncomfortable with the Dick Van Dyke thing because he's just, I mean, he's beyond brilliant. And I kind of wanted her to, you know, take that out, but she... I couldn't talk her out of it. Oh, no, Cindy. Well, Suzanne is her own person, and she is, you know, in her own right, just so marvelous and such a wonderful, wonderful personality. And she, talk about someone with a sense of humor about themselves, which nobody knows, but just a great sense of humor about herself. And I said, Suzanne, I want to read you this, and you tell me if you, I read her the part that I'd written about her. I said, if this embarrasses you or you don't like it, I'll rewrite it or I'll take it out, whatever. And I read it to her, and she started laughing, and she said, wonderful. So
aww.
It's that thing about the dress at the end and what she ends up wearing after we had talked about what we were going to wear to this Vanity Fair party, you know, and then she shows up in this. Anyway, I had such fun going over that with her, and I had a lot of fun with that. And then the other person was Penny. She called me. I said, will you write a quote for my book for the back of for the cover? And she said, let me have the book. I said, no, it's not back from the publishers yet, but you, I'm going to tell you what I wrote. And so I told her, and I said, I do nothing political in here, Penny, nothing about the politics of the show or about, you know, us having spats together or whatever. And she said, you were the nice one. You're the nice one. That's what she said. And she wrote me that marvelous, marvelous quote. And
yeah.
I was just so happy. And I was over there the other day, and she goes, where's my book? And I had had a book signing at Book Soup. So I said, here's your book. And I forgot what I wrote in the book to her, but I adore her.
Well, it's nice that you've remained friends. And, you know, a friendship that lasts from the early collaborations to through the years. And, you know, speaking of fun, it's been such a fun, I don't know where the half hours went, but thank you so much for your time and for this wonderful book.
It was a pleasure all the way around, Richard. Thank you.
Oh, you're most welcome, and God bless you and your daughter, your son, and your future creative endeavors as well that we'll look forward to.
Thank you. Right back at you. God bless you and everybody listening.
Oh, thank you. And by the way, for everybody listening, get the book. It's a tremendous book and a very classy memoir that's, you know, very witty and very very well written. And it'll entertain you, as Ron Howard said. It entertained the hell out of me, Ron Howard said. So everyone listening, I want to thank you for tuning in today. The book is Surely I Jest, Cindy Williams, everywhere. Books are sold online and bookstores. Well, we've actually went over time, so they're going to cut us off in a few seconds. So go with God and be blessed, and thank you so much for tuning in. And get the book as soon as you can. It's one of those great reads that you'll really enjoy.